When you walk into O'Brien's Wines, take confidence from the fact that every one of the wines you see on our shelves comes directly from a winemaker we know personally. We choose quality so you can choose what you like. Our exceptional wines start from less than €10. We'll see you in store or online at obrienswine.ie. O'Brien's, only good choices. Please enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a News Talk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Conversation uncorked.
It's a bit of a meeting ritual, isn't it? Yeah. Let's dance around it for a bit and then if everything works, come together.
I wouldn't let a 20-year-old me anywhere near my festival. Like, there's no way. I wouldn't be let in.
How clean are the toilets?
Yeah, very good question.
Do you tent camp?
No, God, no, I don't.
Do you not? You see, now we get to the truth of it. You wouldn't be caught dead in a tent.
Never have I ever. Never have I ever.
Never have I ever.
Never have I ever.
Never have I ever.
A few weeks ago on this podcast, I was talking to Vanessa Ogbonna about reality TV, and somehow we got onto the subject of music festivals.
I've never enjoyed a festival.
Oh my God, I feel the same about them.
I don't think that we need to be outside for that long. I also don't think that we need to see this many people at once.
At once.
Also, camping. I've never camped at a festival. That's what I've never
done. No, I don't mind camping. I like camping. But I like...
At a festival?
Clean toilets.
So you don't like camping at a festival?
No, I've never camped at a festival.
Yeah.
The prospect of trying to sleep while somebody nearby is singing Wonderwall at 3 a.m. over and over and over again. And yet every single summer, hundreds of thousands of people will voluntarily pack up their cars, head for a field, and then for the rest of the year declare that that was a highlight of their year. Now, something called Forest Fest is about to get underway in my home county of Laois. All Together Now is just around the corner, and before long there'll be 80,000 music lovers descending on Stradbally for Electric Picnic. So what am I missing? Why do otherwise sensible adults spend a weekend living in conditions that they wouldn't tolerate for a single night anywhere else? So never have I ever camped at a music festival. But Philip Maher has. In fact, Philip has built a festival of his very own. And today he's going to try to convince me that I'm wrong about all of it. Philip, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Claire, and welcome home to Laois.
Thank you very much. I think we should explain where we are, because we're in a very strange environment, I think.
Yeah, we're in the heart of Ballykilcavan farm and brewery, just outside Stradbally. It's an absolutely beautiful farm and venue run by David Walsh, chemist, and all his crew here. And as we speak, we are surrounded by large silver containers of beer. So I couldn't be in a happier place in the company of the wonderful Claire Byrne. So I'm a very happy bunny at the moment.
It's great. It's also quite cool in here, because the day that we are here today, it's, I would reckon, touching or reaching for about 30 degrees out there. It is boiling hot.
Absolutely. It's beautiful outside. Lots of people in the area at an event. And we're nicely chilled in here, as I say, surrounded by cool beer. So I'm salivating here at the prospect of getting one later
but
on.
But you're very busy, because you have been doing your other life's work and come to see us in the intervening period, like you're essentially your lunch break, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a solicitor by trade. So I've rushed over from Portlaoise Circuit Court this morning and back in court then in about an hour and a half. So but delighted to make the trip and delighted to be talking to you today.
Is this typical of your life?
Yes, it is. I'd love to say it wasn't, but it's absolutely hectic. Yeah.
So court business, lawyerly business, interspersed and intermingled with festival work.
Yes, all kinds of business involving the festival. Any given day, dealing with emails and talking to managers and agents and my own team. Like, we have a huge team of nearly 40 people at this stage helping me with Forest Fest. So yeah, every day is hectic, but obviously the main focus is on my day-to-day, the lawyer business, as you call it, and then maybe a third of it is Forest Fest, and I delegate after that.
Yeah, but you've other businesses as well though.
Yeah, we have a pub and we have a restaurant in Emo where the festival is. So that's another busy enterprise and doing quite well, but you know, it's another little string in my bow.
Are all of these, apart from Forest Fest, which I'll talk to you about in a minute, are they all family businesses that came down to you, or how did all this work?
No, they would have been businesses that I started myself basically over the years. As regards the festival, years ago I would have run a country and western festival called Rednecks and Rhinestones, which was very popular back in the day. We ran that for 4 or 5 years. It was a lovely kind of small scale festival and was very, very popular. And we're introducing the country and western back into the Forest Fest this year. So it's a heart back. So I'm kind of re-engaging with a lot of the artists that I used to engage with maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm dying to welcome them back.
Well, I think you can already tell that Philip Marr is a man who wears many different hats. Music has been a passion for him since his college days, when he spent as much time chasing live bands as poring over his law books. Philip worked on early Electric Picnic festivals before deciding to take a leap himself and create something different, a festival for people who still love live music but aren't quite so enthusiastic about roughing it. And so, funding the entire project out of his own pocket, he spent the last 5 years persuading thousands of people to spend a weekend camping in a field in Laois. For the next while at least, Philip's got one more skeptic to work on. Can the man who spends his days arguing in court and his evenings persuading some of the biggest names in music to come to a tiny village in the Midlands convince me that I've been getting festivals all wrong? But the law is in your family, isn't it? Your father was a lawyer, your grandfather was a judge, right?
My granddad was the first judge of the Irish Free State.
Wow.
Back in the day. So he used to wander around country in a horse and carriage. And unfortunately, that's how he passed away. He got pneumonia from riding around on the back of a horse and carriage going from court to court. So then my dad took over the reins and then I carried on from him. I worked in Dublin for a number of years and then came down to my dad's practice, worked there for a number of years and then started out my own business about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Were you passionate about the law or were you passionate about the music?
Both, really, Claire, to be honest with you. Obviously, I grew up surrounded by law. My sister was a solicitor. My brother is a solicitor. So, you know, at any given day around the dinner table, it was all law and cases and stories around that. So I suppose I couldn't really avoid it. So I kind of flowed naturally into doing law, but always had a great passion for music as well, but didn't really start promoting events or getting involved in that end of it until I got the pub in Emo and the restaurant and just had the venue to do it. And that's why we started the Rednecks and Rhinestones Festival.
So you heard what I said there in the beginning. Like I do like going to see music acts and I like going to concerts, but I like coming home as well. And it kind of strikes a note of terror in me to think that you couldn't escape, you know, and that you would be trapped there for a night or two in the conditions that I would imagine prevail. Do you know people like me, firstly?
Absolutely. And lots of my friends are used to feel exactly the same way, Claire. You know, all the usual concerns, weather, toilet facilities, getting a shower, the noise, all of those things. But genuinely, anybody that I knew that felt like that, when they did actually jump in, they absolutely loved it and come back year and year. And it can differ from event to event, obviously. We're lucky insofar as for people of our age, that the demographic is that bit more mature. They're respectful to their neighbors in the tent zone and so forth. Like our demographic is between 30 and 80. And we have couples in their 70s and early 80s camping and glamping, coming in camper vans, coming in caravans to us, and they absolutely love it. You know, they all come back with great stories. They meet fantastic people. It's like the Olympics of hugging, actually, in that whole community. All you see is people, you know, by the Saturday evening, they're all just hugging each other and smiling and introducing each other and getting to know each other. So it becomes, over the course of the weekend, this big community because everybody's in the same boat.
Sounds like there's a bit of magic to it, is there?
There is. It's absolutely magic. Like, and genuinely, I'm not just kind of blowing smoke because I'm a promoter. It's absolutely fantastic to see it. It's one of the things I get really great satisfaction out of. It's just looking at people, meeting each other and having such a good time. It's really, really good fun.
So when I say to you that I do like camping, so I do caravan camping with my family, I absolutely love it. But then the festival experience, I have this connotations in my head of all of these other things, you know, the Portaloos and people being messy, you know, in all sorts of ways that I just don't want to be around. Do you think I'm just focusing maybe on the wrong thing?
No, look, you're right. And it's an obvious concern. But I think, again, if you were with the right crowd, they're conscious of the fact that there are people coming after them in the shower, in the toilet, whatever it might be. And they do all respect each other and, you know, look after the facilities that we have. So it hasn't really become a big issue for us. And genuinely, anybody that has jumped into the experience, I'd say 95% of them will come back again the following year. Mm-hmm. So we're obviously doing something right and they're obviously having a good time.
Sometimes it does go wrong, though. And I know that you've had weather problems at Forest Fest.
Yes.
Wasn't it dubbed Rainforest Fest during that particular year?
Yes, in 2023, on the Friday afternoon, as people were beginning to queue up to get in, I was sitting in my car outside the local school. And I actually thought somebody was joking by pouring a bucket of water over my car, but it was actually rain.
No.
And it just did not stop raining for 3 days. The same year, the Forever Young event had been closed down due to rain 5 days beforehand. So we were just in a particular stage of rain at the time. Thankfully, we were able to keep the gates open. But for people camping that weekend, it was an experience. Yeah. So, but, you know, again, they got through it and the mud became fun eventually. There were mud fights and it was a bit like Glastonbury. Some of the years you see people sliding down mud channels and
yes,
different things like
you
that.
Do.
So, you know, people just got involved and had the crack.
And how did you deal with that? How stressful was it?
Oh, it was beyond stressful. I spent a lot of the time, you know, dragging in stone and mulch and different things, trying to keep the gates open. I was in the back of squad cars being blue lighted around the county, trying to find hay at all hours of the morning. You know, driving up farmers' avenues, and they thought God knows what had happened. And in fact, all that was happening was this mad Egypt Philip Marr from Emo looking for his hay. But we kept the doors open, and it was a great event. But it was costly to me.
At moments like that, though, when you're trying to find bales of hay in the middle of the night, yeah. Do you think, what am I doing?
Yeah, I didn't put it as politely as that.
I'd say you didn't.
Myself and a few of the team had a couple of moments, but all you can do is, you know, do the swan on it. You know, the feet underneath the water are going bananas, but the face has to look calm. I had this room in the local GA centre, and it was like Churchill's war room at one stage. Literally, there were guards, health board, Laois County Council, me pleading with them to keep the event going and so forth. So I always, when I even see the GA Centre now, I get my little nervous tick back.
Yes.
So, but we've been great. We've been really lucky with the weather the last couple of years. And when the sun shines, there is not a better experience than a music festival.
I wonder, does that turn some people off? Let's say that year was your first experience of camping for a festival. You mightn't be too inclined to go back.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll have to be honest, because even in the glamping area, and the guys from Pitch Perfect, Claire, they do a great job with us every year. And even their tents got a bit soggy. I'll put it like that. So people had a bit of a damp experience. But again, it's just part of the crack going to the festival. But yeah, I suppose it would have made people reconsider going again. But again, I'd say 70-80% of campers that went in 23 came back in 24. And then that percentage increased again last year. So, and we're way up this year on glamping and tents and camper vans and everything. So it's obviously become so, so popular. And a lot of people, I think, bought tents during COVID. And, you know, they got into the whole scene of camping, and they're going around the country, going to various events each year. Mm. So it's all good. Yeah.
Do you tent camp?
No, God, no, I don't.
Do you not? You see, now we get to the truth of it. This is it. You wouldn't be caught dead in a tent.
No, I'm only joking. Of course, I'm only joking. I would hardly be here now if I wasn't prepared to take a risk. So, no, I've glamped. No, I have to say, I haven't arrived and put up my own tent and all of that. But I have glamped and I've had nothing but great experiences.
So, mm-hmm. That's the kind of camping that you like. So you're not going to be in the tent.
I'm not going to be in my own tent.
Right.
I'm going to be in somebody else's tent.
I am glad that we have established this now, because I think we're kind of on the same wavelength here.
Well, I don't want to come across as a bluffer, basically. So, you know, there are limits. There are limits.
Where did your love of music start?
Just as a kid, I suppose, growing up. And in secondary school, a couple of my pals and myself were you know, studying hard, obviously, but love to listen to music. And the MTUSA on a Sunday afternoon, while you'd be writing your Irish essay, the fab Vinny.
It was like a door into another world, wasn't it?
Incredible. Like seeing Vinny looking down the camera and standing in New York.
In New York. Who goes to New York?
Exactly,
incredible.
Yeah. And they used to fly the video over. You know, it was crazy. They couldn't, back in the days, they couldn't even, people now sort of can't understand that, but they physically had to fly the video over back to Dublin to play it on the Sunday afternoon. But that used to be our go-to, that we'd all look forward to, like obviously Top of the Pops on a Thursday evening, and then Fab Vinny, the MTUSA on the Sunday, and you know, all those great bands back in the time, you know, Nina and ZZ Top, and you know, all these boys looking at raunchy videos and stuff, you know, of the American women and so forth. And it was just like looking at a different world. It, as you said, it was fantastic. And I suppose that's where the real love of music came from. And then began to go to concerts. You know, I would have been into bands like The Cure and The Police and David Bowie and The Beatles. And my sisters would have been into music as well. So we would have had an old LP player at home. And I would have grown up listening to ABBA, you know. I still love ABBA. Who doesn't? But yeah, it was always part of the kind of the dynamic of our house that there'd be music going on.
Yeah,
in the background.
And that's a story common to a lot of people probably listening to this. But how do you go from that to being a festival organizer and booking some of those acts that you've just mentioned?
Yeah, well, the start of it came through the country and western, because it was so popular. And because I had a pub and we were beginning to have acts that were coming in playing music. And through those acts, we kind of made contacts. And then it was suggested that we'd have one or two different nights for them. And that just developed then into a full-blown festival. And it really took off. It was very, very popular at the time. And then obviously COVID came along. I was away and literally listening to my hit list on the phone, toes dipped in the pool. And I turned around and said, do you know what? This might go down well in Emo. And within like literally 3 hours, I had, you know, the stunning Something Happens and, you know, a few other great Irish bands booked because of contacts I had made through the other festival. And everybody was just looking for work at the time. And it developed from there, basically.
God, was your heart not in your mouth? I was making those bookings with no structure in place, really.
To be honest with you, I've always been an eternal optimist. So
okay, I'm getting that impression.
I think you have to be to take a chance like this. And like, you know, when I went with the concept and the acts that I had booked and the venue that I had to actual event organizers, I'll never forget, I had a meeting in the Croke Park Hotel. I was doing a case over in Croke Park when COVID was on, because that's where the courts were sitting at the time for big cases. And I went over to the hotel in Croke Park and they said, Philip, you are effing mad. Like, this
is crazy.
Yeah, but
they were right.
They were right. Yeah, they were right. So I kind of saw that as a bit of a challenge, and I just kind of doubled down then. And I said, okay, but it was always going to be a 5-year project. And this year is year five. And we are where we are. Like, we managed to win the Irish Times Award, the Critics Award last year, which was a great bonus for us. And we've won various other awards around the country as well. So people have bought into the festival.
What's your plan now that you've done the 5 years?
Well, we just review it at the end of July, but it's going a certain direction for us now. Like, the whole idea is to keep it a boutique festival. Like, we never want to go anywhere near Electric Picnic levels or anything like that. Like, we would always look at All Together Now as a
model,
as a fantastic festival, and I love that setup. I love the team down there. They do a great job. So if we could be, you know, maybe somewhere in that kind of conversation, that's where we'd like to be.
Okay. But you're not thinking about stopping your involvement after five years?
No. It was like from a financial point of view, it's always 5 years before you actually break even, let alone make money. So it's all about building the brand, building the project and getting the name out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe after 5 years, you could break even because the costs are astronomical.
Is it not making a bit of money now?
No. No, it hasn't made any money. Like, genuinely, it hasn't made any money yet. This year, hopefully, it will. But, you know, that is the model. It's accepted that
You'd have to really love it, you know, to stick it for the 4 years of hopefully breaking even or making a loss.
Yeah. Well, you'd lose money, you know, certainly for the first 3 years. And obviously year two being so wet cost an awful lot of money through mitigation. You
know, the hay.
Keeping the hay, exactly. The hay, yeah. And stone and mulch and all that goes with it. So, yeah, it was a crazy couple of years. But no, look, it's going well. It's going in the right direction. So it's kind of following the trajectory that mm-hmm. I had in mind.
When you walk into O'Brien's Wines, take confidence from the fact that every one of the wines you see on our shelves comes directly from a winemaker we know personally. We choose quality so you can choose what you like. Our exceptional wines start from less than €10. We'll see you in store or online at obrienswine.ie. O'Brien's, only good choices. Please enjoy alcohol sensibly.
So you won't book bands unless they're still touring and still making a bit of music. Is that your
Absolutely.
Rule?
Absolutely. They have to be match fit. Like, I won't just book a band for the sake of them having a name and them wheeling themselves out for, you know,
one hit wonder in the 80s. Absolutely. Doesn't cut it.
It doesn't cut it at all for me. They all have to be match fit, touring, making music, making, you know, LPs, EPs, whatever it might be. And that unless, you know, even with the very, very established acts, I will always look at their last 6 or 7 live performances. I don't go by, you know, highly produced videos or anything like that. I go by literally, you know, somebody's camera at an event and see how is the vocal. Like, there was a very big act that we were about to book for last year, and they did a show in London, and I literally, a friend of mine went, took a video for me, and the vocal was awful. So we cancelled the booking the next morning. You know, we're very precise about that. It's all about the quality of the music, because we put a huge amount of money into production, staging, lights and everything. So we need the acts to step up to that level as well.
I suppose if you're offering sort of an elevated camping experience and it's for a slightly more mature audience, yeah, then the product has to be of that standard too, right?
Absolutely. And with our demographic, and look, we're not the cheapest event you'll go to. We're not the dearest event, but we do charge a premium at certain levels for certain elements of it. And because our demographic are over 30, they expect a certain standard.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to deliver that. Like, they will be the first to tell you, look, Philip, no, that wasn't up to scratch. You know, this wasn't right. That wasn't right. And we've learned the hard way through the first couple of years. So we're very, very precise now about our planning and making sure that everything is crystal, because you have to, like, what I do is I put my, we call it the customer's journey, basically, from the time they leave their home to the time that they go home. You're thinking about everything from getting into the site, getting into their tent, getting set up. If it rains, what will their experience be? You know, will they have nice food? Will they have nice drink? Will they have treats? Will they have great music? You know, it's everything, basically.
You're kind of changing my mind about this now. And I think my mistake has always been that in my mind, when I think about a festival, I'm probably thinking about Fela, which I never got to.
Okay.
But I know, I kind of know a lot about Fela.
You missed out.
I missed out. Yeah. Well, I asked, could I go? Yeah. But I think I was about between 15 and 17, maybe, when it was on. And just, the permission was not going to come. I tried a lot. I tried very hard. Didn't happen. Yeah. Well, you went to Fela, did you?
I went to it in 1990, the first year of it. And I would have just finished college in 89. So did my Leaving Cert in 86, finished college in 1990. Then went to Blackhall Place. So I was still studying to be a solicitor, but had finished in UCD. So a gang of us went down to Fela, and it was just the most unbelievable experience I ever had.
It was the original and the best, the really,
original,
wasn't it?
Absolutely. You know, with the four of us, the stunning, you know, all those brilliant Irish bands. It was such great crack. You know, I remember coming across a Chinese restaurant and getting a takeaway Chinese.
I love it.
I just couldn't believe it. You know, like, what, like, this is from China? Like, I'm sitting on a wall in Perlis eating it. Like, so exotic, you know?
Oh, and even when you mentioned those bands, I'm now thinking about the conversations that I had with my parents. Okay. This is all I want to do is to see the four of us and to see the stunning, but it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Now, what I heard afterwards, because my brother went, it was pretty wild as well at times.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah,
okay, so there we go. So that, in my head, that's a festival.
Yeah.
And now me at this age doesn't want to be at a festival like that.
Okay.
But what I haven't factored is that there are festivals like your one, which wouldn't be the Fela experience.
Yeah. Right? Like, I wouldn't let a 20-year-old me anywhere near my festival. Like, there's no way I wouldn't be let in. So, like, I was just looking to, you know, snog girls and, you know, act the maggot for 3 days and all of that. Whereas our festival is, as I say, not to be repeating myself, over 30 for the most part. Like, there isn't a kind of a line, but like,
I'm just wondering how you manage that, though.
Well, it's not a case that people aren't allowed in, obviously, but just the way the site is designed and the way the music is set up and the bands we have, it just naturally flows.
That you're not going to get the Electric Picnic crowd.
No, we don't have music for that crowd, basically. Mm-hmm. So like the younger people that we have tend to be fans of the older bands, and that they've become fans of the older bands through their parents listening to music during COVID. Like, I've had that conversation 100 times, that if there are 23, 24, 25 year olds, they are there with their parents and they're, you know, wearing their, you know, Jam t-shirts, they're wearing their Cure t-shirts. And you say, look, how did you get into those? Oh, sir, we were all home during COVID, so Dad was flat out playing Cure or whatever. And geez, they're brilliant, aren't they? And they said, look, and then when they saw the type of acts we had coming, they all came as a family. And a lot of those are glamping, actually, and in camper vans and caravans that you like as well. And as I said, it's just a really, really nice experience.
And there's the TikTok effect as well, isn't there? With a lot of music, TikTok, like, effect, do you remember Kate Bush a year or two ago?
Yeah,
you know,
with
suddenly,
Stranger Things,
and there was a generation that said that they had discovered her of 15-year-olds.
Absolutely,
we had to tell
this
them.
I think that could have been MTUSA time, if I'm not mistaken. So another one of those great videos from back in the day. Yeah.
Do you enjoy the interactions with the acts, with the management of the acts, that side of it?
To be honest with you, during the festival itself, I don't get to meet them that much because I'm so busy doing other things. From the point of view of just the general site management and making sure that everybody is safe, and you're talking to, you know, police and the pelt board and fire officers and all that kind of thing. I like to be involved in that end of things because they really appreciate the fact that the promoter is taking their time out of the festival to be engaged with that.
So, but you're not having champagne or whatever backstage?
No,
with
I'm
the...
not.
Okay.
And people say that to me all the time, but like, genuinely, I cannot recall. I had a beer with Buster from Bad Manners last year.
Yeah.
And best wishes to Bad Manners if he listens to Claire Byrne podcast, because he's not feeling that well at the moment. He would have been coming back, but he's unwell. But that's the only person I had a beer with, even in 4 years. So
so that side of it doesn't really appeal to you, the sort of meeting those kind of people?
It doesn't really. And to be honest with you, when they're all on tour, they just tend to come in and, you know, have a bite to eat, have a drink, do their gig, and they're gone. They're not really into kind of hanging around, to be honest with you. That's my kind of
hearing experience. That from you now, I'm wondering, do you get a chance to enjoy your own festival? Because you're problem solving.
Ah, no, I do. Like, there's a lot of problem solving. And in 2023, like, genuinely, I'd say I heard about 20 minutes of music. That was the over the course of 3 days. But, you know, last year I was a bit calmer and, you know, I had some great experiences. Like, you know, with the likes of Manic Street Preachers, for example, I managed to get 20 minutes backstage, listening to them and looking out at the crowd, singing all the classics back to them.
Oh, like, so you were watching them perform from backstage.
From backstage, yeah. So, like, that was incredible. And, like, their manager at one stage came over and gave me a squeeze in the shoulder, and because he could see I was getting quite emotional. Like, I was literally kind of welling up because it was just such a moment. Like, there was 10,000 people out on the top pitch in Emo GA Club, you know, listening to the Manic Street.
Wild, isn't it?
Bizarre, like, crazy when you think about it. And when I saw that, you know, and it, like, as we said, like, if you threw a sausage out, it wouldn't have landed on the ground. Like, people were
wedged.
People were shoulder to shoulder. So that was a kind of a special moment. But yeah, no, I do get to see it a little bit, but not as much as I'd like to.
But maybe in time, once you have your 5-year review now, you might get to a place where you can be a guest at your own festival.
Maybe so. Yeah, you never know. You never know. So, but I know I'm looking forward to this year. Yeah.
Well, given that we're coming up to it now, like, is it huge in your brain? Are you losing sleep over it? Are you waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking, I haven't done that thing?
Yeah, like, that happens from October. You're thinking, your mind is just totally thinking, wondering about it. Even though I have a great team in place and, you know, I've learned eventually to delegate and that they are genuinely a great team, you're still thinking, you're self-doubting yourself as to whether or not you've asked people to look after certain things. So you're cross-checking the whole time. And I'm not a great person for relaxing anyway, to be honest with you. I'm a little bit...
I get that.
Yeah. OCD, maybe. I don't know. But I don't know, it's fallen together. And this year it's a great relief because we're in a new venue. It's a beautiful farm just on the edge of Emo Village, called Beeswing Farm. And it means that everybody will be together. So all the camper vans, glamping, tents, caravans and everything will be on the one footprint. Previously, they were in different fields, you know, up to a kilometer away from the venue. Whereas this year, it will just feel like a massive big village of people going to the venue. And it also means that if there is rain or damage, we can just plow it back into the ground and it grows again, as opposed to having it on GAA fields. And obviously,
where you get into big trouble if that goes wrong.
Big trouble. In 2020, I actually thought I was going to be run out of the village in 2023 when I saw the condition of the pitch afterwards.
People like it in Emo? So what I imagine happened was people were skeptical about it and now feel quite differently about it in that they welcome it. Would I be right?
Yeah, well, I suppose they had seen the country in Western. So that was a kind of a little dip in the water for them. And they loved that. And they all got involved and were, you know, giving us a big handout and everything like that. So when we proposed this much bigger event, yeah, there was a little bit of skepticism. And obviously local farmers were concerned about getting in and getting out. And it's harvest time. So they were concerned about traffic and all that kind of thing and disturbance. But, you know, once we explained to them what we were going to do and everybody knew what was happening, everybody bought into it. And like literally the venue is the village. So when people come in from outside, they can't get over the warmth. And this is going to sound like I'm sounding like Walt Disney or something, but genuinely, you know, you have people on the Monday morning, like driving their own cars, people back into Portlaoise to get a train home. Or, you know, if they've lost money, there's 20 quid, forget about it or whatever. Like people are just unbelievable in Emo, and every club and every little group, community group, they've all bought into it and they can't do enough for us. Yeah. So that's been a real part of the festival. Yeah. And like the amount of comments we get on social media after the event about, you know, saying thanks to locals bringing out, you know, cups of tea or bringing out cakes and sandwiches. And it's just bananas, really. I can't get over how nice people are.
You're selling it to me now. So my never have I ever might soon be taken off my list because I feel like I'm nearly there. I'm nearly convinced. Talk to me about the loos and the showers and all of that business. What are your rules around keeping them clean and palatable?
Yeah, no, well, hugely important.
How clean are the toilets?
Toilets. That's a very good question. So again, we have a team in place to make sure, look, it's a festival, so they're not going to be like your loo at home, goes without saying. But we have teams in place to make sure as best we can, the toilets are clean, showers are clean. And again, it kind of, but also our crowd tie into that because, like, I don't know if you've been to Electric Picnic, but are some of the bigger festivals with younger people, and they seem to have very little respect for who's coming next. And that's always our doctrine. Like, think of who's coming next. Would you like to use that toilet in the state that you've left it?
Does that work, though? Does that work, telling them that?
Look, it doesn't work all the time. And especially kind of later on in the night, I suppose, when people have a few drinks aboard. Standards can maybe drop a little bit.
I learned a great trick from my 11-year-old. So I brought my two daughters to see Olivia Dean recently.
Yeah, great.
And one of them needed to use the loo. They were a bit nervous about the portaloos, but she saw the cleaner going into the portaloo area and she followed her.
Okay. Yeah.
And the cleaner cleaned the toilet and she went straight in after her as the first user. And I thought, I'm going to use that.
Okay. And now she thinks probably that she's going to have a personal cleaner at every festival she goes to.
Well, if she finds them and hunts them down, it might just work for her, you know? Yeah.
But come here, it's a huge factor, and it's something obviously every year we see it's a big issue that people will comment on, whether they're good, whether they're, you know, not good at any given time of day. And look, as part of our organization of the event, it has to be as good as possible.
So what have you learned about what festivals are about then after 5 years? Like, I know the music obviously is important, but it's not just that, is it?
Oh, look, it's not. And at the end of the day, it's about people coming together, people having a great time, trying to set it up in such a way to give people the best opportunity to have a great time. We think we're doing that at the moment. Obviously, it's a P&L exercise as well. The thing has to, you know, wash its own face if it can at all. So we're getting there on that front. But look, my biggest genuinely concern is that people have a really, really good time and that they tell their friends about it to come back next year, so that each year we can, you know, incrementally grow it, still keeping it boutique, but growing it each year.
Mm-hmm. So what will tell you then once it's over, once you come to the Monday night this year, that that has worked, that was success?
Well, I make a point of meeting as many people. So as people are leaving, they'll see me at the exits. On the Monday morning, I'll be going around the camper vans. I'll be going around the glampers. They'll see me going around. So the guy will speak to hundreds of people. So I'll get a kind of a good vox pop on how the weekend has gone and how people are feeling generally. And of course, these days, social media, you'll know within 10 minutes whether...
Of course.
You know,
do you keep an eye on all of that as the weekend is progressing?
Like, we have a specific team
to watch the social media.
Just doing that and reacting to it. And, you know, dealing with things as they crop up. Because, you know, that's one of the uses.
And there's some people, though, you'll never keep happy. You know, and you'll have heard, I'm sure you'll have had those complaints from people, and nothing you can do is going to make that right.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Look, you have to, I suppose, be sympathetic to everybody's position, and we really try. And that's why I have a team in place doing that now, because in years gone by, I might have reacted that, look, you're not going to see a string quartet in the foyer of the Shelbourne Hotel. You're going to the middle of a field, having a couple of jars with your friends and listening to a brilliant band. But if you think you're going to go downstairs to the Shelbourne and go to the toilets there, or go into the Horseshoe Bar and have a cocktail there, you're talking nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to do a little bit of that at the beginning, reacting to people. Now I have a team in place that will put that much more diplomatically than I ever will. And no expletives or anything like that.
But also you're going into it, I'm sure you're wrecked going into it. You're probably exhausted as the thing starts. Would that be fair?
Tired, but the adrenaline, genuinely, like, you know, by the Wednesday of the event, you know, the Wednesday before the event, your adrenaline is just pouring out your ears, basically. So,
and it's topped up for the whole weekend.
That keeps you going. And then Monday, you're involved in the extraction and the cleanup. And then Tuesday, you try and go to the Galway races. So then...
Is that what you do?
Yep. I let down whatever bit of hair I have left in Galway. So
and then what does the rest of the summer look like then for you once the festival is done?
Well, it'll be Galway, and it will be All Together Now the following weekend.
I see this now. Right. I just think that that is hard to do. If you've just organised a festival and you're going to go to another one where all the PTSD comes back and... You know how the sausages are made. So you're looking at this thing and you're going, Jesus, I see this going wrong, and I see that organizer going wrong, and that manager, you know, is having a hard time. And is it not like reliving the stress of your own festival?
Well, it's a bit like the busman's holidays.
It is a bit.
But like, genuinely, I can switch off, because I'm just like, by the Wednesday or Thursday in Galway, you're just wrecked. Like, literally all the adrenaline is gone. You're winding down. You're trying to turn off your phone and leaving it to the team to get everybody out and extracted and everything. So by Friday, when I, you know, go to All Together Now, I'm genuinely in a good place, very kind of mellow. And I don't really care anymore. I'm just going to just say, look after me. Like, I'm not going to look after you. You look after me now. So... I'm happy. I'm going back to Fela days, sitting on the wall, eating my Chinese. So that's happy days.
So once August is over then, are you straight back into Forest Fest 2027?
Straight back in. And we're actually booking bands for 2027 already. So there's fairly big conversations happening already. And we'd be signing bands by the end of August. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you have to, I suppose, keep the bookings commensurate to the size of the festival, and the fees have to work for the number of people you can get in. So that's a bit of a balancing act, I'd imagine.
No, absolutely. And you're very perceptive. That is the case. You're trying to match up the level of attendance with the caliber of bands you can bring in and so forth. And that is a balancing act. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of it is hope, really. And you're depending on the popularity of the previous year's event. So if you get a really, really good vibe, the people are happy and people are going to be buying tickets again, you can go for that slightly bigger band. And that's what we're doing again this year. And we're hoping to go on sale this year the day after the event, whereas before we would have waited a month. But we're kind of following some models of other events that go on sale literally the day afterwards, so that if people are in good mood.
Yeah, and they'll book again.
They'll book again. That's the hope anyway.
I'm going to spring this on you now. Do you have any Never Have I Evers? Anything that you would like to do, you could never see yourself doing?
Oh, I used to be into hiking quite a bit, but I've never done any of the mountains in Ireland. So I'd love to do maybe two or three of the proper mountains.
Sleeve Blooms?
Oh, I've done Sleeve Blooms.
Yeah, you know, they're hills.
Yeah, they're hills. You know, with the greatest of respect to Laois and the Sleeve Blooms.
Absolutely.
They are hills. But some of the bigger mountains I'd love to do.
So that can be your August
that
project.
That can be August trip, yeah. And a lot of the islands around Ireland I've never been to either. So again, I'd love to do that.
So Philip, you've told me about some of the acts that you've booked over the years. Are there acts that you have designs on your bucket list that you just would love to get in that field in Emo?
Oh, that's a great question. And that's like asking a kid in a sweet shop now. I'd love to have Depeche Mode. They've always been one of my great favourites. I'd love to get Sting. I'd love to get Tears for Fears. Paul Weller. Like, the list is endless, to be honest with you. And my bookers, every, you know, August, I give them a shopping list and they just kind of wryly smile at it. Oh, Philip, there you go again. Okay. You know, you're not looking for Elvis by any chance or anything like that, you know.
But you have to try, right?
You have to try, exactly. And thankfully now everybody answers the phone to us. Whereas year one, we were at nothing because nobody knew us. Whereas now they'll actually have a conversation with us. And while we mightn't get them maybe for, you know, the following 12 months, they'll have a look at our event for the year we were looking for them, see how it went, and they'll, you know, talk to us better. Like, the fact that we got Manic Street Preachers last year probably resulted in us being able to get Madness this year. It works like that.
It's a bit of a meeting ritual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's see this in operation. Let's dance around it for a bit. And then if everything works, come
exactly,
together.
Exactly. And the stature of the event has to match the band.
Of course.
They're conscious of going somewhere where they know they're going to get looked after. Great production, great staging, great lights. Like, they're not going to play on the back of a truck in the square in Portlaoise, for example. And no disrespect to anything that happens there. But, you know, we have to prove ourselves to be able to get the bands that we're trying to get.
Well, it says a lot about you that I'm so amenable to this idea now of camping at a festival. Because when I think back to the original conversation that spawned this, I was talking to Vanessa Ogbonna. And the two of us said, oh, we've never been camping at a festival. I went, and never will. And just not interested, and it won't happen. Don't really feel like that now. Would you want to make a last pitch to me?
Okay, well, look, I can genuinely guarantee if you take the risk and go with a few pals or go with your family, I can say in relation to Forest Fest now, and I don't want to talk for other events, I can almost guarantee you'll have a great time because it's just such a nice crowd, so friendly, so secure, so clean, and the vibe is just hugs, kisses, and, you know, like, literally at some events you bump into each other and there's an argument. You bump into somebody at Forest Fest, you're sending each other Christmas cards 4 months later. That's been my experience with people. And we've had three weddings from Forest Fest as well. So there's some, you know, there's obviously relationships, you know. I know you're not in that
mode. No, I'm not in that
You're gone beyond that. But, like, genuinely, the people you'll meet and the friendships you'll make and the just the really, really friendly vibe is incredible.
Philip, we'll let you get back to court now.
Okay.
Because I think your time has come. That's where you need to focus now.
I'm going to get called soon. Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with us. And the best of luck with Forest Fest this year and in subsequent years as well. It sounds like great fun.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being my guest on Never Have I Ever.
You've been listening to Never Have I Ever with me, Claire Byrne. You'll find a new episode every Wednesday morning on the Go Loud app or wherever you stream your content. Please be sure to like and follow the podcast or leave a review. We love your feedback. You can also email me at any time. The address is never@newstalk.com. Never Have I Ever is a weekly podcast from Newstalk. The producer is Tom Donnelly. And don't forget, you'll find the Claire Byrne Show every weekday morning from 9, live on Newstalk Radio and streaming on the Go Loud app.
Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a Newstalk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Pour your heart out.